It's our pleasure to welcome to the show Darren Revelle. Of course, you know the name, sports media personality, and now with The Action Network. Each month through its award-winning app, website, podcasts, live shows, videos, and social handles, as well as partnerships across pro sports leagues and media outlets, The Action Network serves tens of millions of fans with credible betting content. Darren, welcome to the show. Is this kind of like, when I think about all the bizarre props, is this kind of like your Christmas time of the year over there?
Well, listen, I mean, since moving from ESPN to Action, I mean, just the idea of having crazy data, the props are always really interesting, but Super Bowl, although it's the biggest, is kind of like a ho-hum kind of thing from a value standpoint, as much as I hate to say that. You look at the line right now at 4.5, and you look at the books, and it's pretty much like balanced 50-50 on the dollars. And, I think bookmakers like to get the dollars balanced more on the Super Bowl than any other time. I mean, there's always the line that these guys want to balance it out, and it's not really true. I mean, you see games where they're betting as well, where they have 80% of the money on one team, and that's just how they like it. The Super Bowl, I think, because there's so much money, they want to balance it out a little bit more, and so we're at 4.5 now, and I don't really see much movement, certainly not past any sort of key numbers.
All right, answer this if you can. The idea of an NFT, which already the word fungible is confusing to me, but, an NFT can be a highlight, but can also be a tennis player's arm that she'll let you tattoo. So what the hell is an NFT?
I actually can do this in radio time, Rick, so okay. You'd probably be pretty impressed. So an NFT is a non-fungible token. Now, what does that mean? Well, something that's fungible is immediately on its face worth something. So you give me, if there's a check that's $100, I can get $100 cash. Mm-hmm. It's fungible. It means something. An NFT on its face is not worth anything. Now, people ascribe values to it, right? Like they'll ascribe a certain value to it and say, hey, this CryptoPunk is amazingly worth $200,000. But there's nothing on its face. It's not worth anything. Now, the key value of an NFT is that it is on the blockchain, which is basically a ledger that anyone can see. And so, like when you're transferring your tickets digitally, anyone can kind of see that. So I think people think about just more practically beyond art and collectibles, teams having tickets that are NFTs, it being transferable, the collectible part of it being transferable. That's kind of where we're at right now. So as a business reporter, I can see each level of a transaction, whether someone bid for something, and it's not like I have to ask, right? I can see it all in front of my eyes. And to me, that's intriguing. Now, I know a lot of people have gone today. Miller Lite announced that they're having a bar in the metaverse. I hope that people won't be paying for a fake Miller Lite, maybe a good beer, but not a fake Miller Lite. It is kind of confusing. I really feel like we've all been on tilt because we haven't had normal human interactions in the COVID world. And so we're, the card market's going nuts, nostalgia's going nuts, and of course, NFTs and crypto are going nuts. It's like sports gambling is the most tame of them all.
It's crazy. I don't get a DUI in the metaverse after you go to the
right,
bar.
True. Well, you might. I don't know. Maybe you will. Maybe you will.
Speaking of just baseball cards, because, I'm in my 50s, and I've seen them get hot and cold and hot and cold. And now I was just reading your article from today about the Yankees prospect, Jason Dominguez, a card going for nearly $500,000. And, of course, this is an investment. They think that someday this card is going to be, worth whatever, $5-10 million. But is that, obviously that is something that is non-fungible, because you can't get
right.
That for the card. So what do you think about people investing that type of money in an A-ball prospect?
Well, that's some of the risks that I don't take. I mean, I'm big into collectibles, but I think that this is it's all about scarcity, right? It comes down to scarcity, and this is the one of one, right? So this is the one of one of his card. So the guy's betting that if he is ever good, that this will be, you know, that this is the card. And it would be if he's ever good. But when a guy's betting 240, 254 in single A, I just don't know, man. It was a lot different, Rick, when we were collecting Kevin Seitzer and Todd Van Poppel and Corey Snyder and you know, all these names, and Jerome Walton. It was a lot different there because our in cost was like, you know, at the most $50. But again, it's at a high level. The guy doing this, I know him, you know, and he didn't let me use his name, but, you know, he's on tilt on all of these. You know, he's huge on Zion. He's huge on, and so people have to, like, protect their markets. And so in a way, you know, there, if you get a value on a card that you're deep into this player, you're actually concerned, right? Because then it tells the world publicly that the market doesn't like this guy. And what happens if you're deep in? So, like, this guy's deep into Zion, and he's like, yeah, I was willing to pay $500,000 for the card because there was someone else going against me, and I want the market to show it's $500,000. Now, he'd pay for it. But, I mean, the complexities, it's not just straight up like, this is this player. People have deep interests. They've already gone deep down the road on these prospects. And, you know, frankly, that's one of the reasons why I cover it. It's very much part of gambling.
It's fascinating, too, that you bring up Todd Van Poppel, because he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and he said, Braves, don't draft me. I won't play for your lousy organization. And they draft Larry Jones Jr. He's in the Hall of Fame. I remember going to his major league debut at the Coliseum. It just didn't work out. But if you were going to put any money into a prospect, it would have been him.
It was him in the four aces. It was the four aces. Dave Zecanero, Todd Van Poppel. God, who were the other two? They played for the Hunts. I got their Huntsville Stars minor league card.
Oh, it was, German name. Good Lord.
Can't remember.
Yeah.
Can't remember. But, yeah, you know, so it was a lot different back then. But, you know, I mean, I recently started going down the rabbit hole of collecting tickets, sports tickets. And, you know, again, that's one of those things that no one was supposed to collect, really, right? People saved them and put them in shoeboxes, but they weren't put in cards or sleeves in the same way. And so when PSA, who grades these cards, said 2 years ago, we're now grading tickets, it then said, okay, now you're going to have a chance to look at the population of these tickets. And you look at some of these events, like Michael Jordan's slam dunk in 1988, there's only 21 of them that have been graded, right? So you compare that against the population of a Michael Jordan rookie in a 10, right, the best version of it, and there's 320 of them. You know, the ticket actually, from a scarcity standpoint, when the card people come over, say, oh, my God. And they have such complexities because, like, you think a Cubs fan was going to keep the Steve Bartman game from the 2003 NLCS in their house? Your house is going to burn down, you know? Or do you think a Cavs fan would keep the Jordan over Elo shot? So I think scarcity really drives a lot of these. In a lot of these markets, people are now collecting, you know, sealed VHS tapes, like who, or sealed video games.
Right. Well, so, another thing I wanted to ask you is, a few years ago, I don't know, it was about 10 years ago, a friend, a colleague of mine, Matt Steinmetz, when the Globetrotters were over at Cal, Matt got to play for the Washington Generals, and I've never seen a guy so hacked in my life. They basically beat him up. So when you, what was your experience like?
It was hard. Yeah, I played about 5 minutes for the Globetrotters for one game, and then 5 minutes for the Generals. It was very confusing because obviously it's unlike any other basketball game where, you know, like, you're part of the act, and I'm like, you know, and you try to undo it. I mean, my most embarrassing part was when I played for the Generals. It was at Madison Square Garden. And I stink in basketball to begin with, but the problem is the clear basket, you know, the clear backboard, and then seeing the crowd through it. I can't tell you how hard that is for like a bad athlete to begin with. My perception of where I needed to you know, and I've hit a three-pointer before. But I tried, and I missed, and then the Globetrotter said, here, try again. And I might have taken seven shots and not hit any rim at all. But again, it's like throwing out a first pitch. People are like, oh my God, that was a bad first pitch. Like, do you have any idea how your balls drop when everyone's looking at you? I mean, it's just, you know, and I sang the national anthem in both Canadian and U.S., you know, in a Major League Baseball stadium. And I don't normally get nervous. And like right before, I was like, oh my God, I reminded myself that I knew the tune, but I just learned the words to the Canadian national anthem. Like, God, everyone is hoping for me to fail.
Yeah, especially that sinker ball on that first pitch. Those are really drop.
Last
question for you. I had a guy a couple of years ago come on, and he was this collectible guy from Vegas, and he was going all in, all his money on Derek Carr cards. And I said, look, I love Derek Carr. He's a great kid, but don't put your money into Derek Carr. So my question is, what what should we be putting our money into?
Yeah, you know, like for me, it's and that's a really a good question. Like it's one, what you love, and two, you know, something where, you know, you have to take care of your investments. You can't just put your money into something and then let it go. I think the biggest mistake people make is they say, all right, I'm going to invest in this guy, and they don't realize that they have to know who are the other investors in this guy. Right, so if you invest in a Luka Doncic silver base prism, you have to know that Luka Doncic is going to slant towards 17 to 25 year olds who don't have disposable income. Mm-hmm. Now, why do you need to know that? Well, because when the market starts going down, they're going to sell, and that's going to affect you. So I always say, like, buy what you like, but also understand who are the other investors in the market. I invest in one-of-one type things. I got a lot of publicity from buying Hugh Hefner's Viagra pill bottle. But my problem is I then have – there's no comps to it, right? I just throw out a number and say, okay, I think that's going to be worth more. But if you are in a market where there are comps, right, where there's, you know, Luka Doncic have sold or Derek Carr's have sold – you know, you do have to know who else is in your market and what their capacity is to hold on, what type of people. Otherwise, you're not fully looking at, you know, your what your investment prospectus is.
There it is. It's all laid out, and you can find out more. Go to the Action Network, or just actionnetwork.com. Once again, actionnetwork.com. Speaking with Darren Revell. Hey, Darren, man, thanks for coming on. Have a good Super Bowl, and let's catch up down the road.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate it.